This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Tom Foley is exploring another run for governor. He narrowly lost to Daniel Malloy in 2010, and he spent the last few years talking about policy and keeping his name in the public view. But his initial press conference made news not because of what he said that he would do differently as governor, but because of some accusations leveled at Malloy, hinting at patronage and even political corruption. He told the press he'd provide more evidence, but later said he couldn't confirm that these allegations were true. Some conservative columnists around the state, and even the former governor and now talk show host John Rowland, have criticized Foley for this move. It's allowed Democrats to open up decades-old questions about Foley's arrest record. Today, Where We Live, we will ask Tom Foley about the start of his 2014 gubernatorial campaign, and we will take your questions at 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. You can send emails to wherewelive@wnpr.org, or you can tweet us at Where We Live. Let's take a listen to some of what he had to tell Dennis House on WFSB's Face the State in terms of the allegations he was making against the Malloy administration.
Earlier this year, Roy Etchegrosso left the administration, went back to his political consulting firm, Global Strategies Group, and very recently, they were awarded a very significant contract to handle, I believe, communications and PR for the health exchange for the state, which is a quasi-government entity, but their website is ct.gov, so it's clearly a government entity. Totally improper, if this is the case of what happened to me, that somebody leaves the administration and turns around and within a very short period of time, the company that he's a partner in receives a lucrative government contract.
Since that time, the man who runs the health exchange has said that there's no factual basis for any allegations of patronage. Also, this was an open bidding process. Let's listen to another one of the allegations that Tom Foley made on Face the State.
Andrew McDonald, a very close buddy of the governor, now on our Supreme Court, was a partner in a law firm called Pullman and Comley. And they do a lot of legal work for the municipalities who issue bonds. It is commonly believed among first selectmen that I know that if you don't use Pullman and Comley for your bond issue, it's much less likely that the governor is going to approve it, and he has sole authority to approve all bond offerings to the state.
The law firm has also addressed and rejected those claims. Here's one more having to do with the University of Connecticut.
He took two trips to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. It's quite an expensive trip, and another trip to China. And it's publicly reported, and I think the governor's office actually admitted that some of the expenses of this trip was paid by the UConn Foundation. Now, the UConn Foundation is a primarily privately funded foundation. The people who make those contributions assume that they are providing money for UConn.
So that's a bit of what Tom Foley had to say on Face the State with Dennis House this past Sunday. In just a moment, we hope to be joined by Tom Foley. He's to join us in studio today to answer some of your questions about these claims and others, and a bit more about his run potentially for governor in 2014. I believe that he will be with us soon. He's driving up from Fairfield County right now, and he's not joined us in the studio yet. I will take some of your calls and questions, though, on some of these topics, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. We've got Ken on the line from Hartford. Hi, Ken. Go ahead. John, where we live.
Hi, John. I'm really concerned about a couple of things regarding Governor Foley, or not Governor Foley, potential gubernatorial candidate, Tom Foley. First is whether or not as a Republican he would subscribe to Republican obstructionism and dismantle the health care exchange that Connecticut is setting up, or if he would continue to pursue the exchange that the Democratic administration right now is set up. Second, I really like to know what his theory of education is and whether or not he thinks education is to form workers or to form citizens. And finally, I want him to fully disclose all of his papers from his time in Iraq. I feel very strongly that what he did in Iraq was part of a regime of war crimes that were committed under the Hague Convention of 1899. And it would be easier for us to analyze exactly what he did if it would be revealing all of his papers at once, so that journalists and academics and scholars could analyze exactly what he did. Because he's been, I feel like he's been very...
And Ken,
in his responses as to when people ask him what he did. You know, in 2004, the New York Times and the Louisville Courier Journal asked him what he was doing, and he said, oh, we're privatizing. You know, Paul Bremer said, oh, we're privatizing. And then, you know, 6 months later, they changed their minds, and they said, oh, no, we're not privatizing. When I interviewed him in 2009, he said, oh, no, my job wasn't to privatize. So it's a really important thing for us to get closure on that period of time in American history so we can understand exactly what people like him were doing.
Well, Ken, thank you for the good three questions. So we'll make sure to ask him about dismantling the health care exchange, whether or not this health care exchange that's been set up through the ACA or otherwise known as Obamacare, that's being just rolled out in the state at the beginning of October, whether or not that's something that he supports. Also, his theory of education, and talk a bit about his time in Iraq. We'll also talk about his time as an ambassador to Ireland as well. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. Let's see, we're getting a call here from Colin McEnroe, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Hi, John. You just seemed a little lonely there.
No, I really appreciate you joining me. Thank you so much. Are you stuck in traffic as well?
No, actually, the traffic is moving very smoothly where I am. I was offering actually to come in. I don't know how far behind schedule Mr. Foley is right now.
Well, we're a little bit behind schedule here. He hasn't joined us yet. It's a quarter past the hour, but hopefully we'll see him in the studio soon. Any thoughts on your mind, Colin? We had a chance to really talk about this at great length yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I actually sort of, for Tom Foley, one of the things I'll be listening for today when he does get there is whether he introduces something new. I mean, one of the advantages that he's gained from all this, I mean, obviously there's been some real disadvantages that you sketched out in some detail, just in terms of the disapproval he's encountered, including from some unexpected sources. But, you know, there's an advantage, too, just to dominating a news cycle this long, and there are some people who don't listen very carefully to things, and the only things that they will hear are some of the charges that have been made, and maybe not some of the questions that members of the press have about those charges. And in some ways, it's to his advantage to drop another mini-bomb today. I don't know if he has one, but, you know, if in fact he has advisors who are telling him, yeah, well, basically, you're riding the news cycle pretty well right now, you know, it might be to his advantage to bring up something else or flesh out one of his other claims.
Colin McEnroe joins us from the phone. Colin, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
It's funny. Tom Foley just walked into our studio. Tom, why don't you take a seat? And what we'll do is we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll start our conversation with Tom Foley. I'm getting phone calls here during the show from people who say they can help me fill airtime. That's very nice of you. You can call us on the air, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're getting our election 2014 season off to a bit of an early start with a conversation with Tom Foley. He was the Republican gubernatorial nominee in 2010, narrowly losing to Daniel Malloy. He's exploring another run, and we're going to take your calls for him in a moment at 860-275-7266. Tom Foley, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being here. I know the traffic held you up a little bit, but it's good to see you now.
Good morning, John.
Why are you running for governor again?
Well, I'm concerned about the direction of the state. We have an embarrassing list of what I call worsts and lasts. So we have the lowest economic growth of any state in the country. We've lost – Connecticut residents have lost over 30,000 jobs since 2010. And I think we need a new direction and new leadership, and there seems to be quite a call for it as I travel around the state.
When you announced your exploratory committee – and again, this is not an official run yet, but it's an exploratory committee – a lot of what you just said could have very well been the headline, but the headline for the last couple of days has been a lot of the other stuff you said. And so, not surprisingly, we're going to go through a little bit of that. You made some accusations, some allegations about Governor Malloy and his administration, essentially saying that he's made policy based on political paybacks. We outlined a few of the accusations while we were waiting for you to get here, in your own words, that you made to Dennis House and WFSB. I guess I'll first ask you, why did you decide to start your campaign for governor again this way?
Well, because we have one-party control here in Connecticut right now. There's really not a voice for the opposition. I don't think that the true condition of the state is being articulated by anybody. And so the governor and the legislature are, I think, getting away with presenting a picture that isn't quite true. I also am a good government I'm a strong proponent of good government. I introduced this bill with Joe Markley. Didn't introduce it, but it was part of the support for it last spring. So it's not just the governor. But the point I was trying to make, which I think I made, struck a nerve for sure, is that the impression is out there that the practices and ethical standards of this administration are not certainly as high as it would be if I were governor, and not high enough, because I think the impression is out there that business is being sent to friends, that people are cashing in on leaving the administration after a year or so and then turning it into a business opportunity, cashing in on the relationships with the governor. I think a strong leader doesn't allow that to happen.
Well, you know, one of the things, though, when you started in that first press conference, you talked about evidence that you had, not impressions. You talked about evidence that you had,
yeah.
And then you said that you would roll out that evidence. And in the intervening days, you've said things like this, and we're just going to play a little bit from Dennis House's interview on WFSB.
They're things that are believed, so they're a problem whether they're true or not. But it seems that there's some substance to them, but I can't confirm that they're true.
Tom Foley, that seems, frankly, to a journalist like a pretty weak standard. I don't know that it's true, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Well, actually, it's not. That is the journalistic standard, and I mentioned that on Face the State. I didn't say evidence. I was asked whether or not there was evidence, and I said I would talk more about it later. I'm actually quite surprised that the media has had the reaction they have, because the journalistic standard is two reliable sources are enough to bring a story into the public domain. If you look at the first stories that came out of the Hartford Courant on Governor Rowland, they didn't have proof. These were on reliable sources. If you look at Woodward and Bernstein, probably the benchmark journalist that set the standard was only a single reliable source. And when the source was finally found out, it actually wouldn't have been that reliable.
But as we talked with Mark Pazniokas, who had a conversation with you the other day from the Connecticut Mirror, it's actually not the journalistic standard to just have two people tell you something and then take that forward as sources. You need to know where that information actually comes from. I've taught journalism at the college level for a number of years, so I just respectfully, I think one of the reasons the media might be upset about this is that we know what we're doing, and that's not our standard. Our standard isn't we're going to throw out allegations and then see what sticks. In the intervening days, we've heard you say things about maybe 3 out of 4 of my allegations stick, and that's good enough.
Not maybe. Three out of four are definitely true, and we don't know about the fourth.
Is that your standard for proof moving forward? If you are governor, is that really your standard for how you're going to present information to people?
It supports the problem for the governor is that if only one of them's true, my point is made.
But I'm not talking about politics now. I'm talking about if you're governor of the state of Connecticut, can we trust that when you say things to us, you know it? You don't just guess it. You don't just think it, but you know it for sure.
John, I'm not guessing. I never said I was guessing on this. I have reliable sources that I believe, and 3 of the 4, they've already been verified. There's no factual difference of opinion on this. The facts are established. And so I've got 3 out of 4. We're only 3 days into this. And the governor has not denied the fourth. So I believe it's from reliable, credible sources. And I still believe what I said is true. So,
Jack's calling from Hartford. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering, it seems like whenever, Mr. Foley is questioned about this, he says, it's not necessarily impropriety that's the problem. It's the, fact that it looks like there might be. Well, I'm just saying there's a lot of it seems pretty hypocritical considering he was a major donor to the Bush administration, which led to him getting a post in Ireland, which his main qualification was his last name. And then same thing with the Rowland administration. He was a major donor for both of those campaigns. He was a bundler for the Bush administration. How is it worse how is that even any better than what he's claiming is happening with the Molloy administration?
Thank you, Jack.
Jack, my point is that the public trust is not being well served when a leader's ethical standard is questioned, and I'm surprised that the media isn't behind me on this, because I think most people in the media feel that some of the things that the administration has done are a little questionable, and they've actually looked into these things themselves, not as energetically as I think they should have, but they have. So, listen, when this governor is asking the citizens of this state to make the sacrifices they're making, a huge tax increase, $3 billion in his first budget. We've lost some 30,000 jobs for Connecticut residents since he took office. And, yeah, and spending is still out of control. We're building up we have the largest debt per capita of any state in the country. And so when these sacrifices are being made and people are hurting for jobs, the citizens need to know that their business is being done properly
on
their behalf.
But what Jack asked you about was the fact that you got jobs through the Bush administration in Ireland, in Iraq, after working closely, being a friend of George Bush and raising money for him. How is that different than what you're accusing the governor of doing?
Well, I think the governor putting pressure on the UConn Foundation to pay for a trip to a swanky ski resort in Switzerland while people in Bridgeport, New Haven, and Hartford don't have jobs is an inappropriate use of funds. Most of the funding for the UConn Foundation is from private donors.
But I'll ask you again, how is the job that you got as ambassador to Ireland different than someone getting what you'd call a political patronage job in Hartford? How is that any different? It's the same thing.
It's not a misuse of funds. That is, I believe, a misuse of funds. I think driving business to a law firm, if that's what was done, or at least leaving the impression that if you don't put your business there, that you're less likely to get the citizens' money for legitimate public purposes is improper. I think for Roy Ochoa Grosso to leave the administration. And 6 months later, a firm that he's a partner in is getting a contract. Listen, whether these things are illegal or not, they stink. They smell. And the public has a right to know that their business is being done in their interest.
But you're saying essentially there's a difference between if there's public money at stake versus someone getting a political patronage job, someone being a close friend, raising money, being a bundler for a campaign, and then ending up with a job that, frankly, is a job a lot of people would like. Ambassador to Ireland is a job I think a lot of people in America would like. You got that job because you raised money for George W. Bush. How is that any different than some of the things you're accusing Governor Malloy of?
That's not actually why I got the job. Ambassador's jobs are the ambassador is a personal representative of the president in a foreign country.
Sure.
And so the president needs to know that those people are going to be loyal to him. We have a long history going back to Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams of envoys having personal relationships with the chief executive. That's why I had the job.
But that's, I think, the same way a lot of politics works. And I assume, I mean, maybe we can lay out a little bit of what you would do if you're governor.
Yeah.
Who do you hire? Do you hire your friends? Do you hire people you've worked? You don't hire anybody
know? Listen, if you're a chief executive officer of a public company and you gave business to a friend, you'd be out of a job pretty quickly. The ethical standards in the private sector, in a good law firm, and in a well-run company are much higher than in government. And I think those are the standards that certainly if I were governor I would apply. And I think anything less than that erodes public confidence. And when we have the lowest growth rate of any state in the country, the citizens need to know that our leaders are representing them well. And erodes that perception, and I think people are rightfully cynical.
Well, when we talk about people being rightfully cynical, and Tom Foley is our guest, he's exploring a run for governor again in 2014. He was the Republican gubernatorial nominee back in 2010. We'll take your calls in a moment at 860-275-7266. One of the things that this has done is it has raised a lot of cynicism. It's caused Democrats to go back and ask questions about your past. Back in 2010, when people were raising questions about some arrests that happened decades ago in your life, you said that your opponents should be ashamed of their false and intemperate remarks, which raise serious questions about their truthfulness and personal characters. To raise that specter publicly without any evidence is a shameful lack of fair play in the public domain. Tom Foley, I'm just going to ask you the same question I kind of asked you again before. How is what you're doing now different than what Democrats were doing to you then?
Well, the governor shouldn't be bringing these things up. They were vetted in the 2010 race by the Hartford Courant, and These were charges that were dropped, innocent until proven guilty. These were dropped, so there was actually not even a pursuit of them. And all whatever public records exist about this are out there for people to look at. Nothing is sealed. Nothing's. I haven't requested that anything not be provided. So there are no unrevealed records. So for the governor to come out and say, release the records.
I don't think the governor did. I think the Democratic Party has.
Let me explain this.
Yeah.
A sitting governor is the head of his party. So this is the governor.
The governor didn't specifically, I mean, if we're going to get into specifics, the governor didn't ask for that. The Democratic Party has asked for it. The Democratic Party operation. I mean, let's just
be clear. The sitting governor is the head of his party. So he's the head of the Democratic Party. He does a lot through spokesmen. Not a strong leadership.
But you've asked for more transparency from this governor. Yes. He or whoever in the Democratic Party has asked for more transparency from you. Can you provide more transparency about your arrest records in the past?
No,
than
there
his
are no
previously,
records.
Can there's you no, provide there, more information about? Can,
there's no unreleased, undiscussed records there. So why do they keep going back to that? And this is something from 30 years ago. Do the citizens of Connecticut really care about something that happened 30 years ago? I don't think so. Let's talk. This is Politics 101. The governor and the party, the Democratic Party, don't want to answer the question. So they're trying to change the subject. But this is a question. It's a question of ethics in government. Are the citizens being well represented? Do we have good enough government in Connecticut? Is a legitimate topic. I brought it up. And, hey, guess what? People don't like talking about things that are uncomfortable. But I'm really surprised that the media is not on with you. So this is all about good government. It's about cleaning up practices in Hartford that I think are improper and erode the confidence of the citizens. And maybe people who hang out in Hartford aren't talking to people or at the Capitol aren't talking to people 20 or 30 miles away from here. But this is getting a lot of resonance outside of the Capitol.
I'll say you just raised the term Politics 101. I think former Governor Roland and a few other people have essentially raised this. Conservative columnists, people like Chris Powell, we just read Ray Hackett this morning, wondering why you as the candidate would be raising these issues right now so early in the campaign, especially when you start it with, I'm going to provide some more facts, and then you're saying I don't have all the facts necessarily to back them up.
I provided those facts, John.
You said three out of four. We're talking about the Dan Estee claim?
The UConn Foundation paid a lot of money for the governor's trips to a ski resort in Switzerland and to China.
It was public record before you said anything.
It was public record.
And it had been reported. It had already been reported.
Right.
Was there new evidence that you brought forward?
Yes, there is. That at least one member of the board thought it was against his better judgment and was a lot of pressure was put on him by a senior official in the administration. That's new information. But with or without that information, I believe it's still an improper use of funds. I don't think people who contributed to UConn, no matter what the UConn board says, the people who contributed to UConn, I don't think they were paying for thought they were going to pay for the governor of Connecticut to go and hang out with fat cats in Davos.
Did you get the claim about Dan Estee hiring the governor wrong? Did you get that claim wrong?
I have confidence in my sources. There is something there.
When you say there's something there, what does that mean?
Well, listen, what I said on Face of State was that the people believe, and people I believe are reliable sources, that Dan Estee, through either his consulting firm, himself, some entities associated with, or through other people, was getting money. That was getting money to the governor, either prior to or during his campaign. That's what was told.
He has categorically denied that.
I've not heard him categorically. Who Estee has, but the governor hasn't.
Estee
the governor
has.
Hasn't.
But I think Estee would be in a position to know.
Why hasn't the governor? Well, the governor would know too. Why hasn't the governor denied it?
Well, a very good question is, if you're the sitting governor and someone makes accusations, I mean, Tom Foley is governor. Do you address every single accusation and say no, yes, no, yeah? I mean, yes. Is that how you'd handle the job?
Yes, absolutely. Not every single one, but by somebody who was thinking about being a candidate and my opponent, absolutely. Good leadership and good high ethical standards, I would come out, if I were the governor, I would come out right away, and I called on him to come out on Monday and deny these, and he has not done it. He speaks through spokesmen. He sort of gives the Heisman to the media at Oxford Airport. A good leader, if somebody's comes in and questions the propriety of something he did, gets right out, if it's not true, it gets right out there and says, this is absolutely not true, and provides proof. And he hasn't even denied it. He says, well, I wasn't employed by Dan Estey. That's all he said.
Let's go to Karen. Karen in Manchester. Hi, Karen.
Hi, good morning. I've been following this since it started, and I know that you guys have spoken at length about the UConn Foundation and a bit about the bond issues in the law firm. But I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more about the Dan Estey appointment to the DEEP and exactly what Mr. Foley is accusing Mr. Estey and the governor of, and how would that affect Mr. Estey's ability to function as the commissioner of the DEP?
Thank you, Karen.
That's to me.
Yeah,
okay.
That's to you, yes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I've never met Mr. Estey. I don't know much about him, but I have seen some of his credentials. So I'm in no way questioning his qualifications for the job. He appears to be eminently qualified for the job. I don't know what is going on in somebody else's mind when they make an appointment. So I don't know what the governor was thinking, and I haven't said that it was a payback or anything. What I said was that if Dan Estey was providing some kind of income or support to the governor prior to his being elected and he was then appointed commissioner, it leaves the impression or leaves it open that this could have been a payoff, and that's what I'm talking about. A proper ethical standard doesn't even allow the impression to be left that there was an impropriety or there was an ethical breach, and that would be my standard. That should be this governor's standard, but it isn't, because there is a pattern here of things being done that appear to be payoffs to friends, people leaving the administration and cashing in on a relationship with the governor, as Roy Ochoa-Grosso appears to have done with Global Strategies Group.
I just want to quickly go to something. When we talked a few years ago, and you were good enough to give us time a few times during that campaign in 2010 to answer questions, we got talking a little bit about your relationship with former Governor John Rowland. We talked a bit about some of the misdeeds that eventually sent him to jail. Here's just a short clip from that.
I don't think it was ever proven that any state contracts went to those people as a result of the favors that they gave John Rowland.
It was a part of a longer conversation that we had that essentially I asked, and a caller asked a series of questions about what Governor Rowland did and whether or not he should have gone to jail for what he did. Looking back, I guess I'm wondering, in the context of what we're talking about here, how do you feel what Governor John Rowland did back so many years ago, and what you're essentially accusing Governor Malloy of now? How do you think that those two things align in any way?
Yeah. Well, first of all, what I said that you just played there was that John Rowland never went to trial, so it was
pled guilty.
I know. So, but it was not proven. If you plead, that's not proof. You've pled. You've reached a settlement, effectively.
Because of a preponderance of evidence, I think, that was against him. Wasn't that the case?
But, John, please, it still was not proven. So that's what I meant, that it was not proven because there was never a trial. But if you plead guilty to something, I think reasonable people presume that, yeah, that's something bad probably happened.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that something bad didn't happen, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't have gone to jail. I'm just saying that the facts in that case— the claims were never proven in a court. So nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with it. I guess just taking what we've been talking about over the course of the first bit of the show and then also over the course of the last couple of days, the standard you're essentially applying to Dan Malloy is, if people are talking about it, if it's something that is thought to be a problem by the people of Connecticut or by some people at the Capitol, that's something worth bringing up and actually asking for him to have to respond to. Governor Rowland went to jail because he pled guilty because he was guilty of corruption charges. I mean, and essentially, you're saying there was no proof. You were saying that there was no—
didn't bring the Hartford Courant from bringing it up, and they didn't have proof. What did they have? They had sources.
So essentially, you're saying this is the same sort of thing. The you have sources, and the Hartford Courant had sources back in the day. Yeah.
I'm not saying that this governor has done what Governor Rowland did. I'm not even saying that he's broken the law or even broken our ethical statutes. What I'm saying is he hasn't set a high enough ethical standard in his administration to remove any doubt that bad practices and things that aren't necessarily in the citizens' interest aren't happening. That was the point I made. It was the only point I made. And the four examples I used, I think, were legitimate ones. Three of them have been proven out, so I'm right on three. Hey, I win because I only need to be right on one. But I think three definitely shows that there's a pattern here.
just so you understand, the journalistic standard isn't we throw out a bunch of stuff and hope one thing sticks. I mean, just so you understand.
No. That's not what I did. The three that I have already been established and confirmed now by third parties, they're correct. And the fourth one, we don't know the answer, but it's quite curious that this governor has not come out and categorically denied this. I would have come out right away. I wouldn't be going through spokesmen. I wouldn't be doing trash talk through my party chair who reports to me. There's something a little odd, and I think it just confirms what I'm saying, that the kind of leadership we're seeing here really isn't good enough for Connecticut going through all the troubles we're going right now.
We want to get to a few more calls. Hashim is calling from Hamden. Hi there, Hashim. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi, John. Thank you. So, Mr. Foley, I'd like to ask, you're not a journalist, and you're looking to lead this state and lead the citizens of this state. And I'm wondering, when you are saying you're setting this moral bar by questioning Governor Malloy's ethics, wouldn't the real way to prove that you're ready to take the helm and we should vote for you is to discuss the issues that pertain to people in this state? I mean, people are moving businesses out of this state. People are selling their real estate. It's tough right now to live in Connecticut. You just gave the figures. Those are the things that really count to the people who are voters. And that's what we need. We need a leader. And I'm wondering, maybe who cares what his ethical standards are? Why not just prove what your ethical standards are? And I'm wondering, how do you address us? Why should we vote for you, Mr. Volk?
Hashim, thank you very much. I'll say Hashim has called our program before. He is moving his business out of state, actually. But anyway, to his question.
Well, it's a very good question. When I announced last week, I had about 12 minutes of remarks, and this I'd say that less than 15 seconds of it was about this issue of ethical standards in government. I did talk about the problems that this state suffers. I mentioned them earlier. We have a lot of worse than last, the worst growth rate of any state in the country. Businesses and taxpayers are leaving the state. Connecticut residents have lost over 30,000 jobs since Governor Malloy took office. These are very serious problems. And we continue to spend more and more, and citizens are paying much more in taxes than they were when Governor Malloy was elected, and they aren't getting anything for it. And I talked a lot about this. The government services are deteriorating. Our roads and bridges are crumbling and so on and so forth. So the governor is taking us in a direction that isn't working. And so we need new direction. And I would like, first of all, you're a business owner. I think that I, as governor, would be a lot of relief to most business owners and would send a signal that Connecticut is about to be less business unfriendly. We're considered a toxic environment for businesses based on the policies of this administration and our legislature. So we can do a lot to keep businesses here and bring other businesses here. And this corporate welfare that this governor has entered into, it doesn't make any sense. He's spending way too much money, and he doesn't have to spend the taxpayers' money to do this if he just stops stepping on the brakes with all this regulatory issues and this hostility toward business owners. So keeping businesses here and bringing businesses here would be one thing. I'd solve the budget issue by holding spending flat for 2 years. Under Governor Malloy, spending's gone up by $700 or $800 million a year, about 4.5% each year. That's simply unaffordable. We can solve the budget problem more easily than people think, and we need to address our cities. We have some very serious problems in our cities. There's no urban policy in Connecticut that's going to fix the problems in Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven. We have very high unemployment rates there, particularly among young African-American and Hispanic males. Listen, I'm for an economy, a good economy that everyone benefits for, where everybody's getting a fair deal, where businesses want to stay and invest here in Connecticut, as I mentioned, where everybody who wants a job can find one, and where every child is in a great school. And that's another problem we have in our city.
And a few people want to actually talk about schools. I just want to ask, this report that just came out from the University of Connecticut just yesterday, as a matter of fact, talks about borrowing to help rebuild our infrastructure. Essentially what they're doing is they're making the case that we're sitting on a whole bunch of allocated bond funds that have not actually been put through. We're not borrowing the money, actually. We've said we're going to borrow it, but we haven't actually borrowed it. And that by spending some of this money, we would be able to create up to 28,000 jobs in the state in fairly short order. Do you think that the state needs to be borrowing more, as UConn is suggesting, in order to get the economy going?
Well, it's an excellent question. I've talked about it in the past. One of the problems with our state government right now is they're borrowing. You know, we already have transportation funds. It's a separate fund that's set up from a gas tax and other revenue from our transportation system that is meant to be funding projects in transportation. But this governor is borrowing from that transportation fund to fund our general fund, which I would not do. I think, it's an inappropriate use of funds. Those are dedicated funds. They're not supposed to be used for the general fund. And so as a result, they say they have a balanced budget, but they don't, because they're borrowing, they're taking money out of a fund that's meant to be investment in capital in our transportation system. So not only are they not borrowing it for projects, as you suggest, and I'm a big supporter of – I don't mind borrowing money if you're using it to invest where there's a return. But the problem is this administration is just spending money. They're just handing money out, and it's not an investment in the future. And so the debt piles up, and there's nothing. There are no jobs being created, and we have unbelievable traffic congestion in this state. It's embarrassing. It feels like Los Angeles, and we're a semi-rural state.
We're talking with Tom Foley here. You mentioned in this initial press conference when you talked about these allegations against Governor Malloy, and you talked about many, many other things. We'll get to some of those other things now. I mean, one of the things that you raised some eyebrows when you said that you intend to qualify for public financing of your campaign. Some people are surprised by this. Here's exactly what you said to a question about paying for your own campaign once again.
Why should I pay for my own campaign? Well, I know I can, but why should I?
So why should I pay for my own campaign?
Exactly. Why should I?
Let's listen to what you told us back on Where We Live a couple years ago when we were talking about this. One of your opponents was taking public money at the time, and here's what you said about him.
I don't know how the next governor can lead this state through what we need to go through. I mentioned the need to reduce state spending when he starts off taking millions of dollars in taxpayer money to pay for bumper stickers and ads and so forth.
And so that's a couple years ago,
yep.
Very strongly against public campaign funding. Now you're saying you might do it. Why should I pay for my own campaign? What changed?
Well, I said I'm going to qualify. I didn't say I was going to take the funds, so we'll see. What's changed is the law. Once I won the nomination of the Republican Party and I wasn't taking the public financing and Dan Malloy was, the legislature went in and doubled the grant. They took it from $3 million to $6 billion. Now, that's like changing the rules in the middle of a football game. Again, a problem with one-party control we have in this state. But with the grant at $6 million, and they've changed other aspects of the law, including restricting the funds that you can raise under the traditional way, it's impossible to win today a statewide race, I believe, particularly the governor's race, unless you take the public financing or you write a big check of your own. And listen, people criticized me and they criticized Linda McMahon for writing checks and financing their own campaign. So they really I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't. You can't. There's no point in running for office if you know you can't win.
But beyond what you said there about, you know, you don't really want to go into this job having asked the taxpayers for a whole bunch of money to pay for bumper stickers. You also made the case not just once or twice to me, but I think I heard you say this a number of times, that one of the things about self-financing is that it inoculates you. It keeps you away from special interests. And you said this to me right here in our studio. And I So I'm wondering what changed about that. The fact is that you were making a very strong case that by paying for my own campaign, no one can say Tom Foley's can be bought. Now Tom Foley's saying, well, public financing might be the way to go. It just it seems as though that something substantive has changed over the course of the last 4 years.
I didn't say it might be the way to go. I said I plan to qualify.
But you different. did ask the question, I know I can, but why should I?
Well, hey, why should I?
Yeah.
Really, why should I spend my own money to run for governor? It really, I didn't mind last time, but I think I have a lot of support. People know me. I think I can raise the money. And now we have a public financing system, which on purpose was designed to make it so that people had to use the system. So if you want to get elected now, you pretty much don't have any choice unless you want to write a large personal check. And if I write a large personal check, I can promise you that this governor and his all his spokesmen and surrogates are going to come after me for being self-financing. So, you know, listen, it's the law's changed. It's a different terrain. We're 4 years later. I don't think what I said about it in 2010 should necessarily apply now when the law is different.
We'll also talk about some other things when we come back from our break that Tom Foley said in his initial press conference. He's talking with us here about a potential run for governor in 2014. We've gotten to some of your questions. More people want to join us at 860-275-7266. We're also on CTN, the Connecticut Network today. You can join us also with a tweet at Where We Live. We'll be right back. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Tomorrow, it's our Small Business After Hours event that we taped in the quiet corner in Pomfret. We'll be talking about small business in this very sleepy part of the state. Maybe not so sleepy, actually. A lot of bustling small towns, a lot of business, including some manufacturing. That's our conversation tomorrow. And I hope you can join me tomorrow afternoon from 2 to 4 on Science Friday. I'll be hosting for Ira Flatow from New York. Today we're talking with Tom Foley. He's a Republican exploring a run for governor in 2014. A lot of people want to get involved. Steve's in Windham. Hi, Steve. Go ahead quickly, if you would, because we're running low on time.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks, Foley. I voted for Mr. Foley, and I think he has some legitimate issues with questioning Malloy. And John, I hope you tool up the governor like you tooled up Mr. Malloy.
Now, me and the governor talk like this basically every month, and you listen all the time, Steve. Quickly get to your question. I know you want to ask about education, I think.
Yeah, I want to get on to education. You know, Malloy, even though I voted for Malloy, Malloy has actually pumped more money into these small towns like Windham. But the whole structure, I hate that we have little towns like us or Bridgeport have to go hand with our hat in hand to the state begging for money. Every year we got to go beg for money. Is there any way we could fix the system?
Fix the system of education in the state. Tom Foley, how do we do it?
Well, we have a very complicated system as a result of some court decisions. But listen, we have to do more for our schools, particularly in our cities. The schools simply are not giving the education to these kids that they need to. Some of the schools are very good, but some are not doing enough. You cannot solve this problem without the support of teachers. Teachers are the ones who make the difference in our schools. We have excellent teachers in Connecticut. In some cases, they aren't getting the support they need. I think we have a very rigid curricular system for teachers. We need to open up the routes to certification so that we can get more excellent teachers in there. But, boy, we have to find a way to support our teachers, particularly in our inner-city schools. Let them do what they do best, which is work with kids and advance them through the system. And I'm actually in favor of having rewards and incentives for our best teachers and the ones who do the best job with their kids.
I assume that Tom Foley, if you stay in this race and you decide to run for governor, we're going to have more opportunities to talk about this and other issues, because I could spend a whole hour just talking with you about education.
Absolutely.
Michael tweets us about something I wanted to get to anyway. Has Mr. Foley backed up his claim about losing the last election due to voter fraud last election? Here's what you said. I believe if all voter fraud had been eliminated in 2010, I would have won the election. When you conceded back in 2010, you said you found no credible evidence of fraudulent voting.
Yeah, and I want to clear that up because that was kind of an unfortunate, I think, misunderstanding at my announcement. I said when I conceded that Governor Malloy won the election, and he did. Everywhere across the country, there are types of voter fraud that are not picked up on recounts. So you have what's called walk-around money in the cities where people are paid to vote. You have intimidation at polls. You have, for example, people going into nursing homes and other places where there are people who are instructed on how to vote.
And so, because we just have a minute left, I'm going to loop back to the beginning of our conversation.
Yeah.
In Connecticut, towns and cities, do you have actual proof that this is happening and that it cost you votes in 2010 or it may cost votes in any election? Can you point to specific examples?
Well, no. That's the job of the FBI and our law enforcement agencies. And, they do find these things, but I don't – listen, it's the Democratic Party who's claiming that there's intimidation at the polls. So if they say it's there, I'll take their word for it. And walk-around money, I don't think anybody thinks that doesn't happen.
But I guess what I'm saying, if indeed you're saying if all voter fraud had been eliminated, I would have won the election. I guess I'm just wondering, if you have specific instances, we'd love to hear about them that you know of that happened in Bridgeport or anyplace else.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's not counted in an election. So the person who wins, whether that's going on or not, is a legitimate winner. And I said that, and I'm not taking that back by any means. But if you eliminated walk-around money, intimidation at the polls, and voters who were prompted on how to vote, it might have made up the difference.
Tom Foley is exploring a run for governor in 2014. Maybe the next time I see you, you will have officially jumped into the race.
I hope I see you sooner than that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks, John.
Our program is produced by Tucker Ives with Betsy Kaplan and Heather Brandon. The senior producer is Katie Solarski. Thanks very much to the cameras of CTN. They were taping today's broadcast for future broadcast on their network. I'm John Dankosky. This is Where We Live.
Hear about a new IMAX film on Jerusalem, on Here and Now, this afternoon at 2. Funding comes from Webster Bank, helping individuals, families, and businesses bank the way they want to, online, in person, or on the go. Information at websterbank.com. Webster Bank N.A., member FDIC. Funding also comes from Connecticut Magazine. Each month, Connecticut's original lifestyle magazine offers information about issues, personalities, events, and entertainment on the web at connecticutmag.com. Our health desk is made possible by Ridgefield VNA, healthyct.org, and by Smilo Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. Listen for stories on Morning Edition. For more, go to WNPR.org, keyword health. This is WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas. WNPR and WNPR HD1 Meriden at 90.5, WPKT and WPKT HD1 Norwich at 89.1, WEDW-FM Stamford at 88.5, WRLI Southampton at 91.3, WBSL Sheffield, Massachusetts at 91.7, WAIC Springfield at 91.9, WHDD Sharon at 91.9 FM and 1020 AM, and WNPR.org. You'll see sunny skies today, highs near 80. Tonight, clear, lows around 53. Tomorrow, sunny, highs near 78 degrees. Saturday, mostly sunny, highs near 77. Soak it up because Sunday, showers are likely. Highs near 74. I'm Kyone Wolf. Thanks for tuning in. It's 10 o'clock.